Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas Page, Fort Worth Knights.
Basically, the trick is this. It's that if we can't explain something divine, it's not real. And if we can explain it, therefore it's not divine.
But the problem for us is the Mormon Church denies or distorts a lot of these basic teachings that have always made Christians what they are.
The sole infallible norm of all things is Scripture itself. Why? Because Scripture itself is the voice of God, whereas tradition doesn't occupy that exact same kind of role within the church.
This is John in Michigan, and as a Lutheran high school teacher, I love listening to and using Issues Etc. in my classroom.
It's a little bit of a travel log here in The Economist. The headline reads, "A doctor-assisted suicide is a human right and a relief for many," written by a retired doctor who has witnessed five doctor-assisted deaths in Switzerland, traveling from, I believe, Great Britain to do so. In Switzerland, you can have a doctor assist you in your suicide. Great Britain, that's a crime. Some parts of the United States, it's legal. Some parts, it isn't. And he says it's a human right. He even ends his brief essay in The Economist, quoting from a human rights organization, the European Court of Human Rights, writing in 2002. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, August the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Wesley Smith about this column in The Economist titled "A Doctor-Assisted Suicide is a Human Right and a Relief for Many." A little bit later, Katie Schuerman will join us. We'll talk about a column in The Washington Post titled "Reinventing Religion with Romance Novels." Get her thoughts on the bodice rippers and why they're so popular with the ladies. Eric Johnson will join us from Mormonism Research Ministry. Marriott has acquired new hotels, and they are going to stock each one of their new hotel rooms with a Bible and a Book of Mormon. We'll talk about that, and then Scott Thuma will round everything off on this Monday afternoon, get his thoughts as director of the Hartford Institute for Religious Research at Hartford Seminary, a student of the megachurch phenomenon for decades now, on Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about this Economist column titled "A Doctor-Assisted Suicide is a Human Right and a Relief for Many," Wesley Smith, a regular guest, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm doing fairly well. Here is how Michael Irwin ends his essay for The Economist. He says, "Each of the five persons I have seen die in Switzerland were fortunate. They died as they wished, involving a doctor with dignity." Then he quotes the European Court of Human Rights in 2002, quote, "In an era of growing medical sophistication combined with longer life expectancies, many people are concerned that they should not be forced to linger on in old age or in states of advanced physical or mental decrepitude, which conflicts with strongly held of the self and the personal identity." What do you make of the essay in general, but in particular, how he chose to end it?
Well, Irwin, I've known about him for many years. I debated him once in the UK. He is a longtime euthanasia advocate, has been around from the days of Derek Humphrey. So it's not surprising that he would take this position. A bit disingenuous of The Economist to kind of act like he's just some doctor. He's actually been an adamant euthanasia advocate for decades. This is a matter of ideology for him more than it is a medicine. The way he ended the thing is disingenuous as well. because nobody forces people to stay alive. Not being killed is not being forced to stay alive. So people have the rights, for example, to refuse to be hooked up to machines in the ICU. They have the right to refuse medical treatment. Senator McCain, who recently passed away, you may recall a few days before his death, and there was an announcement that he was refusing all further treatment. That was certainly his right. Nobody was forcing somebody like John McCain or Pope John Paul II, who also, at the end of his life, did not force himself onto machines and so forth, a kind of a vitalism to stay alive no matter what it takes, but allowed nature to take its course. So the Court of European Human Rights, quote, is not about euthanasia. It did not create a human right to euthanasia at all. And as is often the case with euthanasia activists and assisted suicide promoters, there's as much disingenuous advocacy as there are facts in their presentations.
So he, in effect, without coming out and saying it, but by quoting it, was trying to leave the impression that this was kind of a settled legal and human rights issue since 2002.
Well, that's kind of how I read it. There is no right, quote unquote, to be killed, to euthanasia, with the potential exception of Canada. Unfortunately, the Canadian Supreme Court didn't just legalize euthanasia throughout that country in 2015, I believe it was, but they seem to, as I read the decision, create a positive right to receive euthanasia. And this is, I think we've talked about this issue before on Issues Etc., the medical conscience issue. If there is a right to euthanasia, if when you have whatever the guidelines say, and in Canada it says death must be foreseeable, although that was not in the court ruling. The court ruling specifically did not limit it to the terminally ill. You have a positive right that the government must guarantee to receive euthanasia. Then what's going to happen is the government's going to have to coerce doctors to do it. And because governments are not going to set up death camps for sick people or disabled people. So that you begin to see what is happening in Canada. Just as one example, the province of Ontario, Canada, passed a euthanasia law in accordance with the court ruling and with the national euthanasia law that was passed in accordance with the court ruling. But then when Catholic doctors and other Christian doctors and Hippocratic oath-believing doctors said, wait a minute, we do not intend to participate in any way in the killing of our patients, that violates our religious beliefs and that violates our conscience. And moreover, under the Canadian Charter, which is equivalent to the United States Constitution, we have the guaranteed right to freedom of conscience and religion. And Todd, I would note that the Charter right of Canada, the freedom of conscience and religion, is stronger than the United States First Amendment right to free exercise of religion. Conscience does not have to be religiously based. So it's a freedom of conscience and religion. And they brought a lawsuit against this Ontario law, and a judge in Ontario ruled, yes, indeed, your rights to freedom of conscience and religion, doctors who oppose euthanasia are being violated. But that's too bad because, and this is me saying it, I'm inventing a new right, but he did do that, the judge, a right to equitable and equal access to all legal medical procedures. And since the patient has a right to access to legal medical procedures, and you don't want to do a legal medical procedure that is homicide, that is euthanasia, and you don't want to find a doctor who will do it on behalf of the patient, that is a referral obligation, then you can lose your license. And if you don't like those rules, get out of medicine. So you're beginning to see a move toward the creation of a right to euthanasia and the coercion of doctors to participate, but that is certainly not the rule in the European Union or human rights courts. And it's not even the law of Switzerland, which has suicide clinics, which Irwin was referring to, where he took people over to suicide clinics to be made dead.
So I'm curious about medical procedure, that particular term, because how, in any sense, is a doctor facilitating a suicide a medical procedure? Medicine usually considers the death of the patient to be a failure to achieve its goal.
Well, you're seeing a complete redefinition of the obligation and purpose of medicine, so that it isn't to save life, it isn't to heal, it isn't to palliate. It may also include, it includes a broader standard where euthanasia is legal or assisted suicide, to end suffering, to eliminate suffering. And to, if you have to eliminate the sufferer to eliminate suffering under this view, that's acceptable. That is still a huge minority position in the world, but it is the media is in love with this agenda. They push it as hard as they can. Whenever they can, The Economist is having a series of essays supporting and opposing assisted suicide, mostly supporting, but there have been at least some opposing viewpoints presented. But if you take a look at assisted suicide stories in the mainstream media today, you rarely see an authoritative opposing voice. And if you do, usually it's going to be somebody that the reporter thinks will not be viewed favorably by the reader. So sometimes bias can demonstrate and either not giving the opposition perspective or giving the opposition perspective by a voice that the reader will dislike, therefore helping the supporting perspective. And, you know, when I've been doing this 25 years, I got into this fight 25 years ago, and during the first 5 or 10 years, anytime there was a major story, I would get a call. And most of the time now, and I'm not saying this egotistically, but I think I know as much about this issue on the opposing side as just about anybody in the country, and I rarely get called anymore for comment, because it's not just me. It's most opponents who know what they're talking about don't get called for opposing viewpoints.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about a column in The Economist titled "The Doctor-Assisted Suicide is a Human Right and a Relief for Many." When we come back, we'll return to this subject and we'll talk about a little bit more about how it perverts the goals of medicine. And even if we isolated the physician from the situation, euthanasia still is a social problem. We'll talk about that after this. You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Roseborough at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a column in The Economist titled Doctor-Assisted Suicide is a Human Right and a Relief for Many. Wesley Smith, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, is our guest. Wesley, you were speaking before the break about how the physician-assisted suicide movement just completely stands medicine on its head and perverts the overall aims of medicine. Even if we took the doctor out of the picture and we did not have doctors assisting or attending during these suicides, would it still remain a problem?
Of course. Well, first off, you're giving the, if you do that, and you're demonstrating the very fact that it isn't a medical procedure. And what's very interesting in the Netherlands, which has been, a leading proponent of euthanasia, you have a growing movement within that country to take it out of medicine and to make it so that people can do it who are not medically licensed. That's one of the things that the Netherlands has, one of the few things, actually, that the Netherlands has been strict about in terms of enforcing its law, is that only doctors can do it. A nurse once did it, and she actually did time for that, 3 months. But for the Netherlands, that's a lot. But there is a movement now in the Netherlands to take it out of medicine. There was a proposal in Scotland several years ago to legalize assisted suicide and to allow lay facilitators to do it. So that kind of demonstrates that killing is not medicine. But putting the state's imprimatur, the approval of the state, to some people committing suicide is for the state to abdicate and abandon its obligation to protect the lives of all its citizens. The state isn't here to protect the lives of some of its citizens. It isn't here to protect the lives of the healthy and the able-bodied, but more, sometimes more necessarily, to protect the lives of the despairing, the suicidal, people with serious illnesses who become despairing, and so forth. So if you have a euthanasia practice, which Jack Kevorkian, by the way, advocated, and it takes medicine completely out of it, you still have the state saying killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering. And that's a devastation of the purpose of organized society.
I noticed at the beginning of his piece there in The Economist, Michael Irwin said that only one of the five assisted suicides that he witnessed in Switzerland involved a terminally ill patient. And I was a little gratified to see him be honest about that. But then I began to think, wait a minute, maybe he's trying to subtly make the case that you don't have to be terminally ill. All you have to do is want to die.
Well, of course, and I've made this point for 25 years, assisted suicide is not about terminal illness. That is the to use the cliche, the camel's nose in the tent to get average people to accept it. The purpose of assisted suicide is to eliminate suffering. And that they are also saying eliminating the sufferer is an acceptable way to do that. Once you decide that killing is an acceptable way or suicide is an acceptable way to eliminate suffering, how in the world do you maintain a firm line just for the terminally ill? Because there are many people who suffer for a far longer period of time than the terminally ill do with serious conditions, most particularly, by the way, Todd, mental illnesses. The people who may suffer more than cancer patients, may suffer more than people with neurological diseases and so forth, are the severely mentally ill. And the logic of this is that euthanasia and assisted suicide should be acceptable for the mentally ill who are not otherwise physically ill. And of course, in societies where the population has generally accepted the premise that I mentioned, that is precisely what is happening. In the Netherlands and in Belgium, just as two examples, mentally ill people who are not physically ill, who want to die, are brought into hospitals. They are killed in hospitals. They are then, and this was with consent, their bodies are moved into a surgical suite and their organs are harvested. In other words, people with serious mental illnesses who are having a terrible time just getting through the night are being allowed to believe that their deaths have greater value than their lives. And that is a terrible, terrible cruelty, because sometimes that can be the tipping point that would push a mentally ill person into wanting to die and to finally carry it out. Just a few weeks ago in the Netherlands, a woman who was not physically ill, mentally ill, there was a story about her euthanasia and how she died clutching a stuffed dinosaur and this kind of thing. It becomes glamorizes, and when you add in the utilitarian organ harvesting perspective, the danger to people who have, quote, good organs, close quote, such as people with neural disabilities or mental illnesses, becomes quite acute.
So one of the themes that runs through Michael Irwin's piece is that of relief, that every one of the people that he traveled to Switzerland with in order to observe their physician-assisted suicide at the suicide clinic, every one of them had a great final day. They were so relieved to finally be ending their suffering or their anguish. How do you respond to that?
Well, you're got suicidal people, and you're celebrating their suicides, and you're lauding them for committing suicide. And I think that's a promotion of suicide, and I think it's scurrilous. Either we're going to engage in suicide prevention of all suicides, or we're going to say suicide is something that people should be able to do, and that means in order to make sure that they do it right, we should be able to facilitate it. People in our country have to make a decision. I mean, this phony baloney, you know, it's just for the dying, is just to get you to accept the premise. So either you accept the idea that if somebody wants to die, we should help them do it, or you accept the premise that if somebody wants to die, whether it's because of a terminal illness, which may not be the actual reason, by the way, it may just be the pretext, or some other cause, that we should engage in suicide prevention. We should tell people your lives matter. We don't care if you have cancer. We don't care if you have Lou Gehrig's disease. Your lives matter. And in fact, when Dame Cecily Saunders created the modern hospice movement, she's one of the great medical humanitarians of the last couple of hundred years. One of the key ingredients of hospice was suicide prevention, so that if somebody who was terminally ill and in hospice started talking about suicide or wanting to die immediately, the multidisciplinary team was to intervene to find out what it was that that patient needed that would help them want to continue on. When you give up that aspect of hospice, which is what's happening in Oregon, for example, and then say, well, look, these people were in hospice and they had assisted suicide. Isn't that great? Well, what you're doing is you're saying that by depriving them of one of the essential services of hospice and therefore help them commit suicide, that's like saying, well, we didn't give them morphine for pain and they committed suicide. Because you are depriving these patients of an aspect of that medical specialty. And I just find it despicable and disgusting that not only that advocates push it, but that the media just kind of go along with it as if that is a normal process. When what should be happening is when somebody's in hospice, have a terminal illness, and they want suicide to die sooner rather than later, a suicide intervention in the same way we would if that person wanted to kill themselves because their business failed or their children were killed.
What do you think the long-term prospect here, especially here in the United States, is given the fact that we will be having a demographic reality set in with the proportion of the population that will be older than 65, that will be perhaps infirm, that will be in need of long-term care because the lifespans are on the upswing. I imagine that they're going to be selling hard this notion all over the place to a generation of baby boomers who didn't want to get old in the first place.
Yeah, there's two. I'm a baby boomer, and I can tell you, just from my perspective, other than rock and roll music, which I think our music was the best, we've pretty much failed as a generation. We certainly underachieved. And it's all about us. I mean, the me generation. There's two schools of thought of that, is that once baby boomers get to that level, the idea of suicide and being gone will be something they will find they will rebel against. And the other is that that they will embrace it. I don't know what the answer will be. I do know that despite tens of millions of dollars given by George Soros and the likes and other foundations to promote assisted suicide in this country for many, many years now, it's still hard going for those who want to legalize it. But I think the more insidious aspect of what you raised is that society might say, oh my gosh, all these aging baby boomers, they're costing us a lot of money. We should definitely promote assisted suicide and euthanasia, not because we think that it'll be better for them, but because we think it will be better for society and the cost of care. That is a real danger if we ever get into that kind of utilitarian mindset.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and the New Duty to Die. You can purchase Forced Exit and read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd. Always good speaking with you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking about a column that appeared in the Washington Post titled Reinventing Religion with Romance Novels. It says the Bodice Ripper is something sacred and that Christians ought to be reading them and ought to be writing them themselves and reinventing, well, like every generation apparently now has the right to do, reinvent religion. Katie Schuerman will be our guest. Then we'll spend some time talking with Eric Johnson of Mormonism Research Ministry about Marriott adding Bibles and the Book of Mormon to some newly purchased hotels they have acquired. Scott Thuma will join us in the last hour or so of the program. We're going to be looking at Willow Creek from the perspective of a man who studied the megachurch movement his entire career. We'll talk about Willow Creek and the dynamics of a megachurch. Stay tuned.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry. lcms.org/deaconess.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.